Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. Well, we have finally moved out of verses 1 through 16. Today we're going to look at a large chunk in Ephesians as we're going to look at verses 17 through 32. Now, we're not going to read all of that at one time. We're going to kind of read pieces of it as we go. So, and I've even got a chart on your outline as well, if you're looking at that, that we'll refer to as we get kind of toward the tail end of our time here today. All right. But before we begin, as we always do, let's read our memory verse. And this will be the last time we've got this memory verse. Next week, we'll have a new one as we start in February. Hard to imagine. We're already in February in 2021. We are rolling along. All right, here we go. Lamentations 3:22 through 23. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Lamentations 3:22-23. All right. As I mentioned, we're moving out of verses 1 through 16 today, and I think we've mined them for about as much as we can get. We've seen that our position change should bring about a practice change, namely in the church sense, that looks like unity. Unity through diversity, unity in beliefs and diversity in gifts. And then we saw how God has given some specific gifts to the church, and that those specific gifts are for the building up of the body of Christ so that you may do the work of the ministry and to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, I should say. And that as we are using our gifts, and you're using your gifts, and I'm using my gifts, and we're all using our gifts, we should be building each other up over and over. Last week we saw that that God gives these specific gifts or positions really to the church so that we may no longer be children, so that we can mature out of childhood into adulthood, into full maturity, right? And so we've looked at that over the last 4 weeks, I believe. And so today we're going to move on, and Paul's going to introduce us to a new thought about how our position change should affect our practice change as well, okay? All right, so we're going to read just verse 17. We're going to talk about it for a little bit. Then we're going to kind of go on from there. All right, here we go. Verse 17. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. Now, if you'll remember back in verse number 1, Paul said, I urge you, I beg you. And he was appealing to their emotion, to their heart, if you will. But today, Paul kind of ups the game a little bit because he's no longer appealing or imploring. He's insisting. In fact, did you see what he says? Now this I say and testify in the Lord. So he's bringing the Lord into this and saying, hey, I'm using a little more force to tell you that you must no longer walk as Gentiles do. Now that word walk is the one we've seen. This is now the fourth time. We saw it in 2:1-2, 2:10, in 4:1, and now today in 4:17. And it's that word walk around, right? So Paul's getting a lot of mileage out of this word. He's saying you must no longer walk around like the Gentiles do. All right? You must no longer walk around for the Gentiles do. Now, we're going to explain that in a little more detail later, but for right now, you just simply need to know that that idea, walking around like the Gentiles do, equates for Paul your former way of life, a way of life that is anti-Jesus. All right? That's all you need to know about it right now. We're going to explain it in a little bit more detail. Because I want to ask two questions before we move further. So, Paul's going to tell us what he means by this former way of life, this Gentile living. Then he's going to tell us that that's not how we learn, how the Ephesians learned to live, and as a consequence of how we learn to live. And then he's going to explain what that new way of living looks like. But before we do, I want to ask two questions and kind of flesh this out, because I think this is important. The first question is, why would Paul have to write such a thing? And the second question is, what should we learn from Paul even bringing this up about our former way of living? All right, so first one. So Paul says, now I say and testify in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do. Why in the world would he even have to bring this up? You ever thought about that? Why would he even mention it? Why would Paul even think to write this? I think it goes to a fundamental difficulty that we all face, and we see the Ephesians believers facing today, is that the hardest part of the Christian life is not understanding doctrine, it's not understanding theology, although there are some difficult parts, let's be honest. It's not just reading the Bible. It's the difference between knowledge and wisdom, if you will. It's the application of what we know in everyday life. Isn't that the hardest part for you? It's the hardest part for me. The hardest part of the Christian life is not knowing the what, it's knowing when and how and actually doing it. And so the fact that Paul brings up that the Ephesian believers must no longer live as Gentiles do should tell us that they are struggling with acting like believers in everyday life, which should give us some solace, because that's what we struggle with the most. So whatever Paul's going to tell them should be high on the list for us today of things we need to listen to, because we're in this with them, right? So what should this tell us about the nature of our former life? Well, I think very, very easily, very, very without much thought, I guess is probably the way I'm trying to say this, is it should tell us that our former way of living, Gentile living, is very insidious. In fact, it's only one step, one bad decision, one moment away. The fact that Paul brings this up in this section right off the bat should tell us that we are all at risk of either reverting back to Gentile living, having a momentary lapse into Gentile living, or completely going backwards into living a non-Christ-like life. It's only one bad decision away, one moment, one instance away. And so whatever Paul's going to tell us today should be a reminder of how we ought to live, so that we don't live like the Gentiles, all right, like we used to live before God saved us by grace through faith. All right? So, now, let's talk about it. What does Paul mean by Gentile living? All right? Let's read verses 18. Actually, I want to go back and pick up that last little phrase in verse 17, because that's going to be crucial. So he says, in the futility of their minds, verse 18, they are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. Now, Paul uses a litany, a lot of phrases here. And if we're not careful, we can get lost in the phrases, okay? And we don't have time to go over every single one of them in great detail. But what I do want to do today is to bring out one specific idea that runs through every piece of that. And it is this, that Gentile living primarily stems from a Gentile mind. Did you hear the phrases Paul used? Futility of their mind, idleness, emptiness, fruitlessness. He says they're darkened in their understanding, ignorant, hardness of heart, callous, right? And they've given themselves up to all of this stuff. All of those things stem from the mind. Did you know that your mind, that the average human brain, I didn't know this until this week, the average human brain has 100 million neural connections or neurons firing in your brain. Did you know that processing power, your brain can compute 60 bits of information a second? That's pretty amazing. So I think one of the highest ones is like 75 or 78. So between 60 and 75, 78 bits of information per second. Think about all that the human brain has done. All the great works of literature that you've read in high school and in college. All the great mathematical theories. Well, you know what blows my mind? I was thinking about this the other day. Is like I like to watch these shows on the History Channel or Discovery where how it's made, right? That show How It's Made, where like they take you inside and you see how everything is made. And you know it's amazing to me that people came up with the idea for the thing, for whatever it is, a knife, block cheese, right? Or whatever else we've watched on these shows, you know, glass eyeglasses and all cell phones and all these other things that you can watch how it's made. So it's one thing that the human brain has come up with the thing, with the pocket knife or the eyeglasses or paper or whatever. So it's one thing they've come up with. But then if you watch the show, you see all of these machines that are specifically made just to help create that thing. And somebody had to come up with the machine. They had to come up with this massive machine with all these little intricate moving parts. And it's people that created those. People just like me and you. So you've got great works that the human mind has created, great works of literature, all of this science and technology and engineering and design and math. Man, one of my other things that I love to do is go on the internet and look at the pictures from the Hubble telescope. And somebody had to create that thing and then had to create software to interpret the pictures from outer space. And yet we see that humanity and the human mind has searched the depths of space, the depths of the ocean, has come up with all of these ideas for all sorts of things. The human mind is a truly powerful entity, a thing. But yet, on the other side of the spectrum, we see out of all of this beauty, the other side is the human mind has created a ton of tragedy. You look back through history and you see of wars and slavery across the world and in specific countries, and you see atrocity after atrocity, and you see people taking seemingly good ideas and transforming them into something that becomes very, very bad. And you see that the mind is capable of both beauty and tragedy. And ultimately, the Gentile mind, the Gentile way of thinking, which creates the Gentile way of living, is trading out the beauty for the tragedy. Frank Fellman, in his commentary on Ephesians, I think, puts it best when he says this: "The Gentiles conduct their lives according to a futile way of thinking. They do this because, as far as their understanding is concerned, they exist in darkness." He continues, "The worshipful acknowledgement of the one God is foundational to all useful knowledge. Without this foundation, the Gentile knowledge about how to live one's life is deeply flawed." Deeply flawed. But Paul continues. He doesn't stop there, because in verse number 20, he says, "But that is not the way you learn Christ." Meaning, you did not learn to have a relationship with Christ, to be forgiven by grace through faith, to then revert back to your former way of living. That's not how you learn Christ. "Assuming that you have heard about Him and taught in Him, as the truth is in Jesus, to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Now, what Paul's going to do in this section and in the next section, in verses 20 through 24, he's going to give us three big picture ideas. And then in verse 25 through 32, he's going to flesh that out into some daily do's, don'ts, and get rid of this, be this way kind of ideas. But here in 20 through 24, it gives us three big picture ideas of how the Ephesians learned Christ, and ultimately what we're called to do as well as followers of Jesus. Here's number one. Paul says you are to put off your old self. So the old way of living is the Gentile way of living. It is the fruitless, darkened mind, without God way of living. And Paul says you got to put that off. That word put off literally means to cease doing that which you've been accustomed to do, right? He says you got to cease living the way you used to live. Number two, you got to have a renewed mind, right? We've talked about that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in our application as well. And then he says to put on the new self. So three things: put off the old self, renewed mind, and put on the new self. Now, that last phrase, put on, literally means to be dressed or to clothe yourself. And so the picture is that just as in the morning when you get up to get dressed for wherever you're going, work, school, to town, just as you would do that physically, that you're supposed to do that spiritually as well. You're supposed to clothe yourself in a new way of living because your position has changed. So Paul says, put off, cease living the way you've lived, have a renewed mind, and thirdly, clothe yourself with a new way of living. He says here, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Put off the old, renewed spirit of the mind, put on the new self, right? Then, in verses 25 through 32, Paul lists a lot, I mean a lot, of things that we need to consider as we practically live out life. If you're looking at your handout that's on the app, I've got a chart here that Paul, and broken down into three sections. Paul has the don'ts, where he says don't blank, don't blank, don't blank. Then in the middle section he says get rid of, put off, get rid of, get rid of. And then the last section is, he says instead be this way. And he lists the three things: kindness, or be kind, compassionate, and forgiving. Right? And so instead of going through each and every one of these in detail, I think what would be best for us this morning is to get the overall picture that Paul is trying to paint here in this final section. Remember, 20 through 24, he gives us the three big picture ideas. In 25 through 32, he gives us specific things, and there's a lot of them. But in those specific things, what we need to see is that Paul is trying to tell us that when our position changes and our practice equals our position, that every area of our life is affected by the redeeming work of Jesus. Every area of our life. Paul mentions the way we talk in this section. He deals with not just the way we talk, but how we use the words we're using. He talks about anger and emotions and how we deal with them when we're about to lose it. Right? He talks about how we should view work, like physical labor and work. Right? And he says every area of life should be affected by the redeeming work of Jesus. Ultimately, it should affect the general tenor of the way that we live. It should affect us to the point that we should be